in a secret lab somewhere in the Western Hemisphere. The perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men and the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. He's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away.
Yes, it's all good here in the TNT Hood. It's Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2024. This is Locked and Loaded. I am Rick Munn, and we're coming at you live, uncensored, unscripted, uncompromising, unprofessional sometimes, but hey, we get the job done as best we can, and we're trying to be honest here as well. You know, we're not perfect, but we're trying. We're trying, and as they say, God loves a trier. That's another thing Christians say. They say God loves a trier, but that's not biblical at all. That's just something that Christians made up to make themselves feel better. It's not in the Bible. It doesn't say it in the Bible, so stop making stuff up. Oh, people make stuff up all the time, but not me. Not me, no, I never make anything up. No, I don't use my artistic license at all here on this platform that I've been given. Woe betide me if I ever did. What's happening this morning? Oh, what a show it's been. My head's busting in the best possible way. We had an action-packed first hour, and coming up this hour, Gemma Cooper's going to be joining me in just a minute. Paul McGowan is going to be hopping back into TNT Towers again. He's an artist and a political commentator based here in the UK. And of course, Dr. Bruce Scott will also be joining me. Thanks to everyone for all your lovely comments in the live chat and your interaction amongst each other. It's beautiful to see. I don't know if you've ever seen a movie called The Warriors, one of the greatest films ever made back in, I think, 1979. But at the beginning, there's a big meeting of all the gangs in New York, and the leader of the Gramercy Riffs, a guy called Cyrus, gets up on stage and he says, "Look at this. We got the Jones Street Boys next to the Moonrunners. We got the Baseball Furies beside the Orphans." And he said, "And nobody is wasting nobody." He said, "That, my friends, is a miracle, and miracles are how things ought to be." So how beautiful it is to see all our lovely listeners dwelling together in unity in our chat this morning. Long may it continue. Let's have a look at some breaking news here. France, migration chaos. That's the news. And listen to this. These are pretty disturbing statistics. 77% of rape cases in, let me get rid of this. I don't want to support this publication. No, 77% of rape cases on Paris streets were committed by foreigners in 2023. Shock statistics revealed from Paris police headquarters. They said that crimes were largely committed at night in tourist hotspots near places where drugs deal happen. More than three quarters of rapes on the streets of Paris last year. On the streets, that's a pretty scary thought. On the streets, these were happening in public places, were committed by foreign nationals, according to shocking data from French authorities. So listen, never let it be said that there is no correlation between, you know, open borders policies and crime that's being committed. You can't argue with these figures here. That's from France. And if we can pivot across to Ireland as well, this is another story that came out yesterday. Grip Media covered this one. The Taoiseach, Micheál Martin. Yes, his name is Micheál Martin. It looks like Michael, but it's not. It's Micheál Martin said that the Department of Justice failed to register an asylum seeker as a sex offender, despite being aware of his offence for years. It's not satisfactory at all, says Micheál Martin. Who was that comment directed at? Of course, the disgraceful Helen McEntee, who is the head of the Justice Department. Old Micheál said, "This is not satisfactory at all." He added that the department must inquire as to why this was allowed to happen in the first place. You know what? I predicted that McEntee would be gone by next Monday. It's looking like it won't be next Monday now, but anything can happen. But surely, guys and girls and everybody in between out there, it can't be too far away. The writing is on the wall. More and more knives are being slowly taken out from their sheaths this morning for McEntee, and they're aimed squarely between her shoulder blades, metaphorically speaking, of course. So Micheál Martin, Taoiseach, saying that this is unacceptable. We questions need to be asked. And I think that's a veiled swipe at the loathsome Helen McEntee. My. So many stories, so little time. Let's take a break and welcome back the dynamo that is Gemma Cooper, our news correspondent, to give us some more breaking headlines here this morning on TNT. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Questions need to be asked. I don't know about you, Gemma, but I used to work for an insurance company. And there was levels of jumping on people's heads by management. One of the ways was just to get you in a room, intimidate you, and force you out the door. Another one was a subtle way to do it was, we need to ask questions about what Rick Munn's been doing. We need to ask questions. That was usually a forerunner of let's get him the hell out of the building. So interestingly, Micheál Martin is coming out with this rhetoric. It's not really good enough, is it? Questions need to be asked. And normally they're thick as thieves amongst that coalition government, but not anymore. Old tarnished and Micheál Martin's got the sword unscabbarded by the looks of it for McEntee. I don't think he's a fan of hers.
No, but I don't want to make any sword jokes or knife jokes, you know, considering the UK headlines about, you know, the 36-year-old man's just been charged in court of the murder of 14-year-old Daniel Durin. I know it's a metaphor, but it's not one I want to go into today But I get where you're coming from, though, Rick. The knives are out. You know, for metaphorically speaking, for one of their own who just isn't delivering the goods. In my day, in my old world of corporate employment, it was the dreaded "You've got 5 minutes." That was never going to go well. Got 5 minutes means you're going to get a bollocking. Got 5 minutes, in my case, means you're being frog marched out of the building for going to anti-lockdown marches. And that was the end of my career, although I chose to walk, I wasn't fired. But yeah, you know, it's a shady business politics. And like, I know you've got this bet with yourself, with the listeners, with me, as essentially she'll be gone. Helen McEntee, as you like to call her. Those words sometimes reverberate around my head after broadcasting with you here on TNT on a daily basis. But, you know, it is what it is with her. And I'm not a fan of that phrase, it is what it is, because it's like having a million different connotations to a million different people about the same situation. But with her, she's had it coming. That's all I'll say. You know, I've learned a lot about Helen McEntee since working with you. And she's brought it on herself, much like Humza Yousaf. She's brought it on herself.
And, you know, I did also put a caveat in that she was like a barnacle. I said this on Monday, you know, to get a barnacle off a ship, you have to take a hammer and chisel to it. You know, that thing ain't moving with unless it's literally forcibly removed from its office. And McEntee, despite everything that she's done, she's still uploading videos on their social media accounts now to try and explain the position she's taking. An absolute menace of a person. And I don't know what it's going to take. Literally, they might have to send armed Gardaí into her office and forcibly remove her from her post. I don't know, but yeah, she does have that hanging on for grim death vibe about her. So whether or not she's gone by next Monday, but undoubtedly that position that she's in is completely untenable. And I hope she is gone by Monday, but listen, time will tell with that one. So yeah, let's park her to the side as per now. Get back to some of those breaking headlines. What are we going to revisit here in the second hour this morning?
Well, funnily enough, the headline I'm about to bring relates directly to a policy that McEntee wanted to bring in. If you remember, just a few days ago, she was saying she wanted to deploy 100 Gardaí to the border between the Republic and the north of Ireland to stop asylum seekers spilling in, fleeing the UK and trying to find a safe refuge because of the Rwanda bill. The Taoiseach, Simon Harris, has today said, after a big spat with Rishi Sunak yesterday over this very policy, that the Gardaí will not be deployed to the border between the Republic and Northern Ireland and the row over migrants crossing in. He said there were 100 Gardaí on standby, thanks to Helen McEntee, to go up to the border. But of course, he says, no, there will be no border checks and there will be no Gardaí at the border. Rishi Sunak had asked for clarification. Rishi Sunak was dead against this. And Simon Harris, the new Taoiseach, has backed down. So that has happened today. So again, another nail in the coffin on the career of Helen McEntee, as you like to call her, but not looking good for her. Still on the subject of asylum, there's this big breaking story in Southeast London. Protesters have surrounded a hotel. They have slashed the coach tires of a coach that's ready and willing to take away 200 asylum seekers currently in a hotel in Southeast London, taking them to the Bibby Stockholm barge, the floating prison, some have said, moored off the south coast of England in Dorset. The protesters, all wearing masks, very reminiscent of the COVID era, have slashed the tires of the coach, thrown bikes under the wheels, and have formed a human chain around the hotel, stopping any asylum seekers being taken out. They said refugees are welcome here. Allegedly, Black Lives Matter UK were tweeting and urging followers today to turn out to this hotel to stop this movement of migrants taking place. This situation is ongoing and police have been called to that as we speak. And also the corporate giant Uber faces a multi-million pound lawsuit from London's black cabbies. That's been launched in the High Court this morning here in the UK. The action is being launched because Uber allegedly is accused by the Black Cabbie Union of London by illegally obtaining a transport license from Transport for England, Transport for London, rather, in 2012, taking away livelihood and income from thousands of black cab drivers. This is a case that's been ongoing. It was paused during the scamdemic. Now back in the High Court today, the value of the claim is worth 250 million, which means that London's black cabbies, which are just over 10,000, all stand to pocket £25,000 each if they win. I think this is an example of people standing up to the corporations. It's been launched in the High Court once again today. Uber deny the claims. They say that their Transport for London licenses were issued legally. The cabbies disagree. Let's see where this one goes, Rick.
Wow, so much happening today, isn't there? It's so hard to keep a finger on this pulse. But let's rewind a little bit there to the 100 Gardaí being deployed to the border between the north and the south of Ireland. Let me tell you this. If they dispatch 10,000, let's make it 100,000 Gardaí to the border, they won't be able to police the border because they could never police it properly when, you know, there were army checkpoints there. The British Army were there putting bunkers across the border, observation towers, helicopter patrols. It's impossible to completely police that border because it's, if you know the geography of Ireland, you see the little dotted border that goes around Northern Ireland, it comes around like this, and you can get in from the northwest, and you can get in from the southwest, and you can get in from the southeast. You can't police that border. And 100 cops dispatched to where? They'll probably stick them all up to Newry, which is most likely the transport route that people are taking. That's a little village or town or city, actually. It's called a city, but it ain't no city, but it's the city of Newry. It's pretty much bang on the border, but all they'll do is to say there's 100 cops there. Let's hop across in the next village over or over the fields, whatever they can do to get over there. There's no way they're going to police that. So that's only a token move, Gemma. Be under no illusion about that. It's a token move. If that was 10 times, if it was 1,000 or 10,000 Gardaí, it wouldn't stop anybody from getting over the border if they really wanted to. And also just on the Bibby Stockholm, I mean, that's a story you and I have covered for so long now. It's still bobbing about in the headlines there. Think of the money that has been spent keeping that damn thing moored where it is, the money that it costs to bring it over, the insurance that they're probably paying on it. And really, it's not really getting used. The only thing they've found in it, they've never found migrants in it. They've found Legionnaire's disease in it. You know, apparently the water was poisoned and people didn't want to go on there, understandably, if the story was true. But now it's making the headlines again. They're getting a lot of mileage out of the Bibby Stockholm, aren't they? And certainly in terms of news bites, not in terms of actual physical use, but the news bite mileage they're getting out of this thing is incredible.
Well, it is. What's interesting, though, is the mobilization of these activists, campaigners, protesters, whatever you want to call them, that have surrounded this hotel in southeast London in Peckham. It's a big hotel, a Best Western hotel, where there are 200 asylum seekers, all being housed at the taxpayers' expense, a story which we've covered. It happens across the UK, as we know. But they're being moved today. Somebody obviously tipped off that these campaigners that they were going to be moved. And these campaigners have mobilized with quite significant, sophisticated strength to surround this hotel. They formed a human chain. There's nobody going anywhere. The tires on the coach have been slashed, which is criminal damage, and bikes have been thrown underneath to stop it moving. And allegedly, Black Lives Matter UK have been at the linchpin of this. And a lot of the protesters, campaigners, activists, whatever you want to call them, whoever they're funded by, they're wearing masks. It's akin, some of the images coming out of this, to 4 years ago, COVID images. You know, nobody's showing their face, which is strange if you think they've got the courage of their convictions. They want to protect migrants, which many do, and that's understandable. I think English people are, in the main, or UK people are very compassionate. But something has happened this morning, which has led to this tinderbox of activity in Southeast London outside a very big corporate hotel, which has been housing hundreds of these people. I don't necessarily think this story is about the Bibby Stockholm barge, although you're quite right, Rick. The Bibby, you mentioned the word Bibby Stockholm in this country, in the UK, and everybody knows what you're talking about. This big floating prison effectively off the coast of Dorset. But whether or not we're going to see some kind of escalation in violence outside this hotel, police are there, a human chain, masked protesters, nobody's going anywhere. It's not dying down, this one. It's not being resolved. It's escalating. Tires slashed on a coach, bikes thrown underneath, human chain, masked protesters. It doesn't bode well. I think probably I'll be doing an update on this story in an hour's time on the Freeman report. It shows what a tinderbox asylum is. We talked about Dublin yesterday, Tent City being cleared. They're trying to move protesters out of asylum seekers out of hotels. They know what a big issue that is for the UK taxpayer. And look at what's happened. We've got an escalating scene in almost central London, really. Peckham's not that far out of London, southeast London. So it's one to watch with interest and one to remind ourselves how much of an issue this is. But also, where did these campaigners come from? How are they tipped off so quickly? And how did they know to mobilise so fast? Who's funding them and who is tipping them off? I think a lot of people in the chat might have their own answers to that.
So many questions, but yet so little time. But yeah, feel free to leave your answers to those or your speculations to that in our live chat, tntradio.live. We've got to stop now, Gemma. Take a little break and then welcome my next guest on. That's Paul McGowan. So many thanks to you, as always, for your invaluable input this morning on the breaking news front and other insights on top of the breaking news. You know, there's many dimensions, many layers to the Gemma Cooper cake here on TNT. So big thanks to you. And we'll talk again tomorrow morning, all being well. Unlocked and loaded. And stay tuned for more here. We'll be right back after the break on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
It's time to switch on
Today's News Talk Radio.
Very entertaining.
Yeah! TNT.
Okay, what a morning it's been, or an afternoon, morning and afternoon it's been now. We're straddling the midday mark right now on the Locked and Loaded show. It's Thursday, the 2nd of May, big day for elections and all other sorts of shenanigans and skullduggery in the UK today. I'm very happy to be joined again for the second time on Locked and Loaded by the one and only Paul McGowan. Paul is a fantastic artist and he's also a political commentator, and he's very kindly taking time out of his morning or his afternoon to come on here and talk to me today. Welcome back, Paul. How are you doing?
It's great to be back on TNT. I love TNT. So, you know, I've been on it a lot lately and I love it every time.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. And let's hope we can keep the experience pleasant for you here this morning on Locked and Loaded. A few things we're going to chew the fat about here today. Pensions, we're going to kick off with UK pensions. Apparently, there's a pension black hole looming on the horizon after Rishi Sunak fails to rule out raising a retirement age to 75. Work until 75, then go straight to voluntary euthanasia. Some commentators have put this. Looks a little bit odd, doesn't it? It used to be 65, then 66, 67, 68, and now he's looking at punting up the pension age to 75. What do you make of this?
Well, it makes it renders the triple lock useless. If you're extending your working years, what's the point of putting the triple lock on it? And when you see all the money being wasted by this country on stupid diversity schemes, LGBT plus, which cost billions and billions, these programs, 8 million a day housing, just migrants. It's just a waste of money. It's a total betrayal of the people. Now, this is why this really annoys me. I took early retirement. Basically, my skeleton's about 20 years older than my body. I'm on my fourth hip replacement, but I could afford it. So I sat down, looked at my money. I thought, well, I can easily make it for the last few years to get to my pension. And then by the time my pension kicks in, for what I've spent out of my private pension already, that will make up for it, and I'll still end up with a decent life. Now, if you change that to 75, I will literally have nothing left. Nothing left. With my old age pension, that would be it. So I can't afford to do that. I have got options, but I mean, loads of people at my age that took early retirement, they do it because they have got those options. I mean, I could got a cottage I could rent out, or could be holiday let, but I don't want to do those things. I want to enjoy what time I have. And once you put it up to 75, the triple lock just becomes a total joke, because they should have seen this coming. They should have seen this coming. The shortfall, it's not like a small shortfall, it's humongous. And they cannot blatantly spend so much money on just nefarious projects about all things that people, the man on the street, never agrees with them. And then just turn around to everyone and say, ha-ha, now you're not retiring. I mean, it's like our old age care costs so much now. Everyone's losing their houses. Their children are getting left with nothing. I mean, this is just not fair. I mean, and it'll kill the Tories. It's like, well, the Tories are dead anyway, but it is just absolutely disgraceful. But Labour will blatantly put it up as well, because there's going to be no choice, because the management's been terrible for decades and decades and decades on this, you know?
Is this a case of Paul, the goalposts are being moved? Because obviously, you know, when you were younger, you were setting things aside for your retirement, as people do. They build up nest eggs here. They maybe buy a little property there. They maybe put money into a personal pension, just whatever you feel is the best option for you. So obviously you've done that and you're starting to draw down in that, or you have been drawing down in that. But now this is very much a case of, well, hang on a minute. My plans were around about this point, and now the Tories are moving the goalposts potentially 10 years further down the line. They could turn around and say, well, listen, you know, the responsibility was on you to make sure that you kept things. But it's all fine saying that to people, but the reality is not a lot of people can afford to look down into the future, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, and then prepare themselves for massive shifts in the goalposts, especially as they're running up to the retirement. But no doubt that's how they're going to try and spin this one. The onus is on you. It's not our fault. The onus was always on you as the retiree.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is, it's such a huge increase. It's not like they're suggesting like a year, because it's meant to go up anyway a year. It's estimated. If you can Google online, they estimated it would only be 1 year it'd go up. And I was fine with that. I thought I can cope with that. But 75? I don't even know if I'm going to be alive at 75. All that money I've paid into that pension, where does that go then? I've paid it, I've taken it for my pension, and then how many people are actually... The amount of people that won't make it to 75 is unbelievable. They're just totally screwing people over, you know?
They are. And just to put a full stop in this one, because we've got to take a little headline break, just to give people an idea of the figures. So fears were raised over how the Tories plan to fill a 46% billion-pound pension black hole with plans to abolish national insurance after Sunak failed to rule out raising the retirement age. Well, that figure, $46 billion, that's a lot of money, no doubt about it. But as you alluded to earlier on, there's no problem with magicking up a billion here and a billion there when it comes to supporting wars in foreign countries or repainting zebra crossings to make rainbow colours. Or, for example, cast your mind back over the last 3 or 4 years, how many, what, $37 billion spent on a track and trace app that was never really used, hundreds of billions magicked up, trillions printed to cover furlough payments, PPE equipment. So although $46 billion is a lot of money, the government had no problem magicking up amounts like that when it suited them or when it suited their agenda. But now apparently they have fears over their how they're going to raise this amount of money to plug an alleged pension black hole. So again, it very much depends on the cause, whether or not they'll be able to come up with a solution for it. But we're going to take a headline break right now, Paul. We'll only be back in 30 seconds. And when we do, let's look at some of the loony policies that are affecting motorists and, you know, people in general right across the UK with regards to ULEZ zones, clean air zones, taxing on where you can move to, your freedom to move, and so on and so forth. We'll do that when we come back after the break here on TNT. Don't go away.
Have you heard the news?
The news.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is the news.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. US President Joe Biden's plan to resettle Palestinians from Gaza in the United States has lit a match among Republicans.
Your towns and villages will now be accepting people from Gaza.
Dozens of Western tanks and armored vehicles captured by Russian troops in Ukraine have gone on display in Moscow. And the UK has started detaining migrants in preparation for them to be removed from the country under the government's new immigration policy.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Oh, man, we had a little break there for the headlines, but it doesn't stop me from talking. It doesn't stop Paul from talking. We're both chatterboxes, I think. So that's a dangerous combination. It's like mixing certain chemicals together that could be an explosive effect. But it's not a bad thing because there's an awful lot of ground to cover. And we're trying to cover as much as we can here in the time that we have. So, Paul, I want to look at motorists, okay? There's undoubtedly a war on against motorists right across the UK. And some places seem to have it worse than others. So, for example, under Mark Drakeford, most people will know that he tried to enforce 20 miles an hour speed limits in many, many places, allegedly to save money for the NHS. He reckoned it would save 9 billion quid over 10 years because there would be less car accidents, less people would be getting wrecked. The Welsh were absolutely incensed. They signed a petition against this. About 500,000 people signed it, which was more than the amount of people voted for Drakeford. And when he was presented with this evidence in Parliament, he simply said, tough, it's here and it's staying. But not just Wales, but now this is being rolled out in Glasgow as well. They're trying to build in this 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in Glasgow and other places in the UK. Mate, I don't know about you. I like to drive sensibly, but it's almost impossible to drive at 20 miles an hour. I can nearly run faster than 20 miles per hour, not saying something. What are the likelihood of this bedding in Glasgow, do you think?
I don't think it's bedding in anywhere. But I'm in South London quite a lot. My daughter lives in South London, and I'm always driving backwards and forwards there. It is incredibly dangerous to drive at 20 miles an hour. I'm constantly driving through, checking my speedo, checking the road, and I've already had a ticket for going over 20. I think I was doing something like 26, and I didn't even realise I was in a 20 zone, because the signs are tiny little red discs. I mean, and if you're in full traffic, you don't see the big 20-mile-an-hour disc on the road, because if you're following a lorry or something like, you just don't get to see the road. It's back-to-back, it's bumper-to-bumper traffic, isn't it? But those 20-mile-an-hour limits are bloody dangerous in built-up cities. Bloody dangerous indeed. Somebody turns the corner, you can't see on that, you don't notice the light that the post has the 20 disc on it. It's just, it's a money-making scheme. We know it's a money-making scheme, but it comes straight from the top of the establishment. They want it. You're not going to get rid of it. You can fight for it as much as you want, but we're gonna have to fight harder, because this is being rolled out to stay. This is gonna be rolled out to stay. Now, I've been in the middle of all this from 15 Minute City to Life. If you look up urban cell groups, urban cell planning. Originally, they were called cell groups, where they'd get 16 to 35. I don't know why the number was 16. It always confused me. 16 to 35 people from a local community. They would create a cell group plan. It was called a cell group plan. You can Google it, urban cell groups. They would sit and devise their own city, what they'd like to live in, their own area. And now that model has been taken into 20-minute cities, 15-minute cities, whatever you people call them in their local area. And this 20-mile-an-hour zone is all part of it. And it is a war on motorists. And I live in the country. Whenever I drive into Wales or into London, it is like it's just impossible. Wales is like the LGBTQ plus capital of the world. I've never seen so much diversity and equity signs everywhere. 20-mile-an-hour zones. It's the wokest place I've ever been in my life. And that is all a waste of money. And if, like, going back to pensions black holes, this is, you know, why are we wasting money on this rubbish? You know, it is rubbish as well.
And here's the thing. I don't like to laugh at your misfortune, but whenever you said I got a speeding ticket, I was doing 26 in a 20 zone. Think about how ludicrous that sounds. If you were to tell somebody from anywhere in the world, oh, I've got a speeding ticket. What speed were you doing? 100, 120 miles an hour? No, I was doing 26 miles per hour in a 20 miles per hour zone. And normally there's a tolerance, an unwritten tolerance among the cops to stop them from doing excessive amounts of paperwork. They normally give you 10%. Plus 2 miles per hour as a little bit of leeway. They don't have to do it, but they sometimes turn a blind eye. But in a 20 zone, my friend, that means that if you're doing 24 in a 20 zone, you could be busted for that. And as you rightly said, then you're spending more of your time staring at your speedo instead of looking at the road in case there happens to be a detection unit there waiting to jump on you and do you for doing a terrible, reckless move of 26 miles an hour in a 20 zone. It's just madness.
Well, I've nearly got into the back of another car in South London, watching my speedo and watching the car, back-to-back traffic. It's quick, you know. Somebody brakes, somebody walks out on the road, and, you know, and everyone's bumper to bumper. And so, because it's just impossible. It's impossible to do in a built-up city. And it is definitely designed to make people get out of their cars, get on their bikes. But, you know, what if you can't get out of your car? What if you can't get... Do you know, have you noticed? Yeah. When, look at my... In Bath, they've set this sort of program going. We used to go into Bath, in the city of Bath, and you'd see loads of old people going around on them with their walking sticks, their Zimmers. But now they've banned anyone driving into the centre of Bath. They have to use a park and ride now miles away. There's all the disabled parking bays. If you go and park in them, one of these old people, they get fined, even though the bays are still marked out on the road. So they think they're fine parking there. Now you go into the centre of Bath, you won't see any disabled people at all. They've basically pushed them out. It's like they're trying to hide them away. And I wouldn't mind these things so much if it wasn't such a target on the elderly. And it is a massive target on the elderly.
Yeah. It is. And just to finalize this conversation, because we've got to take a pause now, just Glasgow City Council, this is funny, in their words, they're reducing the speed limit to 20 miles per hour in the Glasgow streets, almost 4,000 streets, and I quote, to encourage more walking, more cycling, and more wheeling. Wheeling, I don't know about you, maybe it's my age, but I don't know what wheeling is, but whatever wheeling is, Glasgow City Council want to encourage more.
I can guarantee it's not a skateboard.
No, it's not a skateboard. So
when I was a kid, they fought to get skateboards off the pavement. You know, they hated us. But I don't know.
Maybe they're trying to revisit the golden years of the 70s and the 80s with skateboards, or probably not, knowing Glasgow City Council. But listen, Paul, we've got to put a pause in this one for now. It's been an absolute blast and a pleasure talking to you again here. And whatever you're off for the rest of your day, have an absolutely epic day. And we'll hopefully talk again sooner rather than later. That is Paul McGowan. I'm Rick Munn, and we'll be back after the short break with Bruce Scott. Don't go away. Stay tuned for more here on TNT Today's News Talk.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, Thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
The impact of a meal goes well beyond feeding our bodies. Because when people are fed, futures are nourished. Everyone deserves to live a full life. And with your help, together we can end hunger. Join the movement at feedingamerica.org/act now.
Informative and engaging.
Rick Mund.
Rick Mund on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Woo, what a show it's been this morning. The action never stops. We don't let up. When the show starts, we put our foot on the gas and we don't take it off for a full 2 hours. What a great way to end the show here today, joined by my old sparring partner, the none other than Dr. Bruce Scott, psychoanalyst and author of Gulag Caledonia. It was originally written as a fiction novel, but it looks like it's a prophetic tome right now. Bruce, how are you doing? And welcome back to Locked and Loaded.
I'm all right, Rick. That's good to be here.
Well, you know, you and I, we've been bouncing back and forth for the last few days about what we're going to talk about here today. I said, you know, there's no end of stuff, obviously, to talk about. There's a lot of shenanigans that have been happening in the Scottish Parliament with the Scottish National Party, Sturgeon's husband. That's just to name two things since the last time you were on here. The Scottish COVID inquiry is still very much ongoing. More and more horror stories and revelations coming out off of the back of that one. Glasgow wants to implement a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit on 4,000 of its city streets. Scotland seems to be a little bit of a hotbed of dystopian totalitarianism right now. What do you think that is?
Well, I think a lot of it is political theatre. You know, the musical chairs of the Scottish Parliament is a predictable production that they've done. They got rid of Sturgeon, they put in Hamza, they're getting rid of Hamza, they'll put in someone just as bad to continue. And it gets everyone's political juices flowing, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I find it very interesting that these things take up people's attention, because things mm-hmm. like the Scottish COVID inquiry gets forgotten. And other things, mm-hmm. like the real humdrum issues that I've thought about is, you know, with the net zero, the 15-minute cities coming in, this idea of they want more people cycling and walking, but there's all the great public toilet disappearance in the UK that has concerned me as an ordinary person in society. And I've been making inquiries to Edinburgh City Council, to Midlothian Council, to the Scottish Borders Council on the lack of public toilets in the cities, towns, railway stations, ScotRail as well, and also at the park and rides, because they keep declaring the ULEZ, the low emission zones, are coming in, and they've spent all this money on cycle lanes and CCTV. But why is, as some reports are saying, that 50 to 60% of public toilets have disappeared in the last few years? Huh. Vernon Coleman brought this up a few years ago when COVID was going on. And he said, saying that the toilets are closing and they won't be reopening. Huh. There seems to be a very strange movement to stop movement. Because this is not... My fears about the public toilets closing and not getting a reply from these councils, they're not replying to my emails. The Royal Society for Public Health wrote a report in 2019 called The Decline of the Great British Toilet, and it is shocking to read.
Yes.
So my fears are not unfounded.
Here's the thing, and here's the thing, tying in with this, you know, discouraging people to move or discouraging people to move too far away from their homes, especially among the elderly, right? If you're elderly and maybe your health's not great, you know, you can develop issues where you need to go to the toilet more frequently. So when you plan a day out, if you're an elderly person or if you're someone who suffers from their health, maybe you've got irritable bowel syndrome, maybe you've got prostate problems, whatever it happens to be, and that can be young and old. A lot of people plan their journeys around about, well, is there a toilet where I'm going just in case I get cut short? And they worry about it. It causes a lot of anxiety. So when a lot of these public toilets do close down, effectively what it does, it frightens people into staying at home because they think, well, I can't afford to get caught short in public because it could be extremely embarrassing. And a lot of people also that are given little lanyards, or they get lanyards that they can go into a shop, for example, and say, listen, I urgently need to go to the toilet. Can you let me use your conveniences, please? Some people have been refused access by staff and had some nasty experiences in public where they, you know, they've had a bowel movement or whatnot. That's terrified them, say, well, I'll never go out in public again because I wouldn't want to go through that shame and humiliation. So that's part of it too, I think, Bruce. It's to discourage people from leaving the home, especially elderly people. They want them very much in their place.
Well, yes, it's exactly, it is it's psychological nudging from the behavioral scientists to manipulate behavior. It's quite clear because it's outlined in the Climate Change Commission document, UK government, House of Lords 2022, that they want to use the same tactics to manipulate people's behavior and change their habits. People can go and read that, and they're going to be using the same tactics that they used in COVID. Now, the key point from the Royal Society for Public Health document is exactly that. Knowledge of lack of facilities acts as what they call a loo leash, deterring as many as 1 in 5, 20% from venturing out from their homes as often as they would like. And this rises to over 2 in 5, 43% among those with medical conditions requiring frequent toilet use. And over half, 56% of the public, restrict fluid intake due to concern over the lack of toilet facilities. And it's worse for women because, you know, women who have given birth and have children, etc.
Yes.
That creates an extra difficulty. You know, and they call this the potty party legislation. So it's like, they're taking a feminist sort of slant to it and saying it's very disadvantageous to women. Supposedly, we're all for women, but the lack of public toilets is contra that. But, and it's also, you know, the idea of sanitation, you know, but all this. What's there's lack of toilets. There's a thing called wild toileting, peeing in bushes, going up a little side street, etc., etc. I thought everyone was worried about security, biosecurity, and public health. You know, I thought COVID was a danger. And do you think people should be peeing around in bushes, etc., etc.?
No, here's the thing too. It's also easier. It's also a lot easier to do that if you're a guy. If you need to take a pee somewhere, it's a lot easier to find a bush to stand behind and do that business if you're a man. It's not so easy to do that if you're a woman as well. And it's interesting, those figures that you've just quoted as well, because I didn't know what those figures were. You mentioned up to 43% of people in some cases were afraid to go out, or it was discouraging them from going away from home, especially if they had medical issues. And also you mentioned actually restriction of fluid intake, especially coming into the summer months too. If you have people that are actually voluntarily dehydrating themselves because they're afraid they might get cut short if they need to go to the toilet, then they could have other issues, health problems off the back of that from dehydration.
People with health problems, with bladder problems, especially with our health, general health in the UK at the moment is getting worse and worse and worse, with evidence with the people going on having on to the sick from not being able to work anymore. It's taking the PISS, so to speak, because 74% of people in this research that the Royal Society did, 74% of the public say there's not enough toilets. And it does. So this acts as a way to stop people moving around. The question is, why? If you pose the question to some people, some of the politicians will say, "Oh, it's funding." But then you look at what funding. Well, it costs between 15,000 and 60,000 pounds to run a public toilet, apparently, according to this report. But look what they've paid in the last few years. 310 to 410 billion pounds has been spent in the pandemic. The Ukraine is 12 billion, track and trace 25 billion. The Nightingale hospitals is 532 million. Only 272 people were treated. 1.3 billion a year has been spent on illegal migrants every year. 800 million in moonshot, the PCR stuff in the UK. £1 billion for advertising for COVID. And the vaccine drive is 11 billion and mounting all the time. Right. There is plenty of money for a public toilet. They've also got plenty of money for CCTV. They've also got plenty of money for making cycle lanes. Something very sinister is afoot here with the net zero coming in and the 15-minute gulags that they're preparing. Why are they wanting to nudge people to stop them going out and about? It's clearly not lack of money, and it's clearly not an issue with planning, town planning or urban planning. If there is a movement of people going through an area or congregating within an area, one of the first things is public health, and they have to put in toilets. Why are they not doing that? I encourage viewers in the UK and elsewhere, and I'm sure it'll be a global thing, because the UN are saying that public toilets are a necessity. Why aren't they a necessity here? To ask the local councils, where are the public toilets going? I've asked these questions on local Facebook groups and got banned from them straight away. So I can't ask any questions. I've emailed councils and I'm not getting any answers. And I find this very sinister.
It is, and it seems like it's certainly not a topic that's ever, you never hear this really discussed. And some people could say, look, you know, you're reading too much into this, you know, if you're taking it down to the level of access to public toilets. But as we can see from this conversation, how it's actually developing, it's a massive thing for a lot of people. People listening in the live chat at the minute, just to give you an example, one of our listeners, Wee Fat Shug, said, yes, my ex peed herself every time she coughed for months after she gave birth. So this isn't just limited to the elderly. And don't forget women who are maybe having time of the month as well. They maybe need to nip in and do some business during the course of the day. What if they can't get access to anywhere as well? Again, it puts pressure on people. It causes massive amounts of anxiety. And the women, I would say, Bruce, in all of this, are the worst affected, because it's easier for a guy to maybe slip behind somewhere in the dark alley somewhere and relieve himself than it is for a woman to do that. And in fact, Shug then went on to make a little joke. For anybody that followed Billy Connolly back in the day, he used to joke about not being able to leave the house without wearing these incontinence trousers. Maybe that's another thing for a little bit of humiliation. Well, if you can't find a public toilet, you can't venture out without some kind of an alternative way to urinate. And, you know, as crazy as that sounds, and I know it's a joke, it could be something that's on the cards as well. And I wouldn't rule it out from that government in doing it. I want to talk just for a minute, if we can, Bruce, as well, because it would be remiss not to do this. The Scottish COVID inquiry is, of course, ongoing at the minute. And as we know, our mutual contact, Dave, the independent researcher, a.k.a. biology phenom, has been covering this for a long time. I want to look at this very briefly in two ways. Number one, the work that he and Rustler and other people are actually doing at the minute. There was a post put up yesterday, Scottish COVID inquiry. Robert Pollock, the paramedic, said that do not resuscitate. Notice toe tagging happened during lockdown. People over a certain age, normal attempts at resuscitation would be minimized, usually 70 and over. But they were discussing doing that for over 50s as well. Now, I don't know what age you are, but I'll be 51 in July. I find it hard to believe that I fall into the category where I would be DNR toe tagged in the event of another pandemic. I mean, I know I'm not young and I'm not the fittest in the world, but I mean, like, there's a little bit of life in this whole dog yet. You know, I don't know about you, but I feel a little bit uncomfortable reading that.
Yeah, well, I haven't been keeping up with the latest posts about that, but I have read about this before, and it is shocking. Why, of course, it's been ignored by the mainstream media, focusing on things like the hate crime bill, which is important, but and now the SNP leadership context and the transgender issue with blocking puberty blockers in England and the caste report. Important things, but people, old people, elderly people, have been systematically put in DNRs without families' desire. And why is there not more coverage of this? And why is there not a police investigation? Because to me, to stop someone bringing them back to life, you know, and making a deliberate decision, seems to me to be a criminal issue. You know, if you're in a hospital and someone goes, well, don't bother resuscitating him, he's 51. Wow. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah.
I think people are, like public toilet thing, which might sound humdrum, but people are shying away from these very, very issues, because these affect everyone, our own families, elderly people. I mean, my mother died 2 or 3 years ago now. You know, and some of the treatment she received was a bit questionable. And public sanitation affects everyone. You know, we don't know what's going on in Gaza or Israel or Ukraine. We know what's going on in our towns and cities, public toilets, care homes, relatives. You know, journalists, the mainstream journalists are doing a disservice to us. The politicians who are fighting over the SNP leadership don't care, because they're not saying anything about the COVID inquiry or the DNRs. None of them are. None of them, not even Kate Forbes, the Christian.
Here's the thing as well, just off the back of this as we round this one up. I've been following Dave, his account, very closely over the last few weeks. In fact, he was the one that brought it up to me. He said, you know, are you not covering this in a little bit more detail? Now, of course, I cover a lot of issues UK-wide, worldwide. So I only have a finite amount of time, but I am trying to allocate a little bit more time to this, because it seems to be, Bruce, that every day that this inquiry goes on for, there are new evidences presented as fact to show what actually happened in Scotland during those lockdown years. And one of the questions that Dave brings up in particular is, you know, why are more people not covering this? And of course, the mainstream media are conspicuous in their absence from covering this, but also other sources. Now, I know not everybody can allocate time to every subject that people ask them to do that. I get that. But I am surprised that more people aren't picking up on this wealth of factual information that's coming out on a daily basis that could effectively, you know, sink this whole organization up in Scotland. But there doesn't just seem to be the coverage that maybe there should be on it. Do you think there's a reason behind that as well? Maybe people's focus is on foreign lands at the minute. Maybe the focus should be more on what's happening on our own doorstep.
I think it's this treatment of elderly in care homes, for example. It is the most concrete evidence you can get of a criminal behaviour that's went on. You can pontificate all you want about Ukraine, or pontificate all you want about PCR contracts and PPE contracts and what scandal that was. This is concrete stuff. And even so-called alternative media are shying away from it. I think it's a controlled attempt to distract away from what looks to me as criminal issues with the way people were treated systematically, given midazolam and other drugs like that, DNR, starved. I was in Edinburgh the other day, and there were all these protesters protesting about the climate. They're not protesting about their own elderly people in their care homes being treated disgracefully, whether it's deliberate or it's been an accident. But they're not bothered. That is highly concerning.
Isn't it? I just can't marry that up. And I get that not everybody can cover every story that everybody wants to, but even pay it some attention or even give it some exposure. Some of these, you know, influential people with bigger accounts or bigger platforms seem to be brushing it over completely, which I don't know. I can only speak for myself, but I'm trying to give it a little bit of light and attention anyway. And I appreciate you doing the same thing here this morning. Listen, Bruce, we're pretty much up to time on this one for now. I just want to direct people your way if I can. If you don't already do so, follow Bruce on Twitter or X at Dr. Dr. Bruce Scott, and that's Scott with two T's, or you can follow him on his website, brucescott.org.uk, and he does have a great book out, Gulag Caledonia. We've been discussing this one for a couple of years now, and like I said, he wrote it as a work of fiction about a dystopian Scottish future, but it seems to be prophetic rather than a work of fiction now, and more of it seems to be coming true by the day. So Bruce, thanks again for taking time out of your day. I really appreciate you coming on here and talking to you so openly and honestly. God bless you, and I hope you have a great day. I'm out of here for the day. I'll be back again to close off the week tomorrow morning, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. UK time. Stay tuned for more magic here on TNT, Today's News Talk.